We all know that America evolved as a melting pot, and one place that that's most evident is in our food, especially in the ways that food from different cultures crosses over. I'm thinking about how at my Thanksgiving table we'll have my Nona's pork sausage dressing, but also homemade chocolate cream pie from my dad's side of the family. Food tells our history, and that history is passed down through the cooks in our own families. Those are the kinds of stories that Tony Tipton Martin hopes to bring to Boston and beyond as the new editor-in-chief of Cook's Country. The magazine and its public television show are part of the Boston-based America's Test Kitchen franchise, and Tipton Martin is the first person of color to lead an America's Test Kitchen publication as editor-in-chief. She's joining us now to talk more about her vision for Cook's Country, and she's going to take your calls. What's the story behind the food you cook or you grew up with? Are there things you're making this Thanksgiving to remind you of family heritage? Maybe those you won't be seeing this year? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. Tony Tipton Martin, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. I want to congratulate you on the new job, and I want to ask you what it's been like to be making this transition to a new job during a global pandemic.
It has been quite a exciting time. There's been lots going on for me personally. I was injured the 2 weeks before, I think it was, my start date. So, you know, I've been adjusting to stretching in between Zoom calls and onboarding. But the team has been fantastic. I couldn't have wished for a better experience as I have re-entered the editing phase of my work. They're just so gracious and open and willing to share all of the ins and outs of America's Test Kitchen. I'm really, really excited.
I should just ask you, are you okay now, physically healthy? You doing all right?
I am. My therapist says that I'm progressing well. It's never fast enough. You know, I'd love to be outside on the trail again, but that's coming. So I'm able to do a little cooking, and that has been really gratifying. I was very concerned about just whether I'd even be able to put any of our favorites on the table. And it seems like a small thing, but you know, everybody's talking about that right now. We want to return to some sense of normalcy, and I certainly feel that too.
What's one of the favorites that you want to make sure you can put on the table, and why?
Well, I actually just posted on Instagram that I made my Grand Marnier spiked cranberry sauce between calls today. Between calls today. It only takes, you know, 10 minutes of prep and 10 minutes to cook. So you're talking about a 20-minute investment, and the flavor is fantastic. For those who think that they aren't fans of cranberry sauce, maybe it's because they're choosing the one in the can. And so America's Test Kitchen and Cook's Country have an assortment of adaptations for making the side dish really different. You can add maple syrup or whatever flavors inspire you. But my family has grown accustomed to the flavors of orange. And so, you know, for me, prepping for Thanksgiving occurs in stages. And I start with those things that can be made ahead and store well in the back of the refrigerator. And this is one of those dishes that we just, you know, we all look forward to.
We are talking to Tony Tipton Martin, the new editor-in-chief of Cook's Country. And we invite you to join the conversation. What are some of the recipes that represent your heritage, your history? What are some traditions in the kitchen and the power of food that are important to you? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Tony, you are truly a food historian, and I wonder how you want to bring that to building on or expanding Cook's Country, you know, around telling the American food history through more voices. Where are you going to put the spotlight that it hasn't been?
Well, I love that you framed your question that way, because America's Test Kitchen and Cook's Country are already known for their impeccable recipes, reliability, and the deliciousness of the dishes that we inspire cooks to try at home. And among the I don't know, the philosophies that we hold is that we will tell the stories behind those dishes. And in a lot of ways, that has meant explaining to you how the dish came to be in terms of the techniques and the methodology and the substitutions one might make to inspire cooks to become more competent in the kitchen. And what I want to do is build on that reputation by inspiring you to cook, by learning more about the people behind the foods that are our beloved favorites. And so you can expect to see more faces in the magazine. We're going to really talk to cooks, learn more about what tools they love, what some of their favorite ingredients are. And maybe we won't ask them a question at all, really. We'll just be nostalgic for those times when we're together in the kitchen cooking side by side with a loved one. And you're just there working together. And I hope that portraits of great cooks, great American cooks, will create that same kind of atmosphere for people in their kitchens when they take our magazine and our programming with them into the kitchen.
You have focused in the past on untold stories of our American food history. Your book, Jubilee, which focuses on Black food history in America, and the Jemima Code, which spotlights forgotten Black cooks, including those who served in white households. Can you place those histories in the overall American food story for us, especially people who didn't get recognition they deserved for being creators of parts of our food culture, but then erased from that story?
Oh, sure. You know, it's a tangled, complicated history. One of the most compelling stories in Jubilee and the book that preceded it, The Jemima Code, one of the stories comes from right there in the Boston area, right here, eventually I will be saying. But and this the gentleman who was the author of this book was the house servant, the butler in the governor's mansion. And he produced it's a collection of recipes, but therefore an assortment of things, not just recipes for cooking, but also for managing a household, including things like how to remove flies from glass. But it's a fascinating study of the world of these people that we have portrayed as ignorant or not as proficient and competent as trained chefs. And yet they were working many times unsupervised and supervising others in the production of food in some of America's grand homes. And so I just love the fact that Robert Roberts penned this household servant's guide as a love letter, really, to the next generation. Obviously, historians have complained that this was a book designed to just create more servants. And in the social context in which it was produced, that is certainly true. But if we can look beyond some of that and just extract the competencies and the passion for food and cooking and the care of others, a whole different story can be told. And that's the kind of beauty that I hope to bring to the pages of Cook's Country by shining a light on invisible American cooks as well.
I want to stay with some of your work on the history of food in America and the Black history of food in America. I want to play from some sound for you. In 2018, Radio Boston spoke to culinary historian Michael Twitty about caricatures like Aunt Jemima. Here he is.
We still have Aunt Jemima. We still have Uncle Ben. We still have the Cream of Wheat Man. We still have these embedded images of the power imbalance in the Old South based on food. The context is still there, but the material is there, but the context isn't. And so, for me, a part of reapproaching our tradition was breaking down that wall, going, okay, this is not the reality.
So you, of course, wrote the Jemima Code. And then earlier this year, you wrote an op-ed in the New York Times discussing this decision by Quaker Oats. They decided to retire the Aunt Jemima pancake mix and syrup brand, which is based on a caricature of Black cooks. And you talk about the real women, like your own grandmother and the women in the Jemima Code, whose values and skills have been misrepresented by the Aunt Jemima image. Why have we held on to these images for so long? And are you showing us through that op-ed what you can do and will continue to do about a different form of sort of culinary storytelling?
Well, I can't really speak for why the industry holds on to those images, except to say that that's perhaps that explanation is rooted in the title, The Jemima Code, right? I recognized through the study of American food history that we've enjoyed a love-hate relationship with African-American cooks. And we've appreciated their competencies and then quickly disparaged them for some other, you know, level of incomplete knowledge. As a balance for for offering an expression of confidence in them, and that behavior has persisted throughout time. We've just two steps forward, three steps back in terms of our love hate relationship with Black people in general, which was why I was not an advocate initially of removing the image from the package, because I was concerned that would complete the erasure, that we would never talk about Aunt Jemima again, even as a fictitious character. I wanted there to be a further investigation into the real lives of African-American cooks before we dismissed the imagery. So I was pleased when the decision was made, and someone much wiser than I posted on Twitter shortly thereafter that we don't need Aunt Jemima anymore because now we have the Jemima Code. And what that meant was a celebration of, at least in terms of the code, 150 new faces of real people that we can celebrate, we can study, we can learn from, we can learn to be better cooks and better human beings by our expression of fellowship at the table in their memory.
Let's talk about the stories behind recipes, and I'll start with one that you shared with us. You shared with us one pan turkey with herb stuffing and cranberry sauce, and we will have the recipe on our website at radioboston.org. Obviously a great Thanksgiving recipe. Is there a special story behind it?
There isn't a special story for me personally. The recipe resonates because so many people are sharing their anxiety about entering into this holiday without being able to put on the traditional gigantic spread with multiple side dishes and an enormous turkey and so on. And this is just a delightful alternative to that. It can be made in one pan. It still allows the family to enjoy those flavors that are so familiar and so comforting to us. But then it gives us a chance to talk perhaps about some other aspects of the day. The word Thanksgiving is a two-part word. We often speak about being thankful, but we don't think about giving. And what I like about this idea of a truncated menu is that maybe we have resources that we can share with others, especially when we're seeing people lining up in food lines and going to community refrigerators. The giving part can be achieved perhaps because we are spending less on that enormous spread that, frankly, registered dietitians have been trying to get us to cut back for years. And so I just really like that recipe for that reason. In my household, I will be taking advantage of a recipe from Jubilee. We haven't decided which one of the two we're going to do, but it will involve the Southwestern flavors, or maybe I'll just put the Southwestern flavors from Jubilee on that turkey breast.
So wait, what are the two candidates? You said there are two you're trying to decide between.
So the one is the recipe that we gave you. That's a Cook's Country recipe. You know, I'm doing a little dance right now because I'm living within two spaces. I'm promoting both dimensions of my work. And the really telling part about who I've been within the industry is, you know, kind of wrapped up in this Southwestern flavored turkey that we put on our menu a few years ago as a commemoration of our Southern California history, and the fact that, you know, people often complain that turkey is dry, it's uninteresting, that's why we buy fried turkeys. Some people smoke their turkeys. People have tried all kinds of ways to bring excitement to the centerpiece, but I, for one, was not willing to give up that gorgeous bird at the center of the table. So the men in my household wanted to fry it and, you know, add those Cajun flavors, but it's not very pretty. So the Southwestern flavors came natural to me and seemed like an alternative. And then at the table, we wound up talking more and more about our history. It was great.
So I'm afraid we have to stop there, but it's been a pleasure to have you. That's Toni Tipton Martin, editor-in-chief of Cook's Country. And I hope you come back again. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure.